body wisdom.
We are today continuing, for those of you who arrived just a little tardy, we're continuing on the third of our four-part homily series on the human body. As I said to you at the beginning of the liturgy, we are expanding on the teaching of the Catholic Church expressed by Pope John Paul II in his series of short talks, which were called the theology of the body, or have been called the theology of the body. And today we're going to be talking about the body, the human body itself, and the way that God made it. And we're going. The chief objective that I have today in teaching you is to teach you to think of the human body as an icon versus an idol. And the reason that I think it is an extremely important teaching is that the culture that we live in today encourages us more and more to think of the human body as an idol rather than an icon. So, let me show you something. Let me show you a piece of paper. Okay? I have a piece of paper up here. Now, it's a special piece of paper because it is actually a rectangular piece of paper. And it is, I'm holding in my hand, a $20 bill. That's as high as I could get this morning from one of our parishioners who actually believes he's getting it back. Now, who of you, if I were giving this away, who of you would like it? Who wants 20 bucks? Almost everybody wants 20 bucks, right? Okay. Now, I'm going to fold it into a tiny little piece. Who wants this still? You still want it? Okay. Well, let me see what I can do here. I'm crunching it up and making it into just a tight ball. Just a little ball. Who still wants it? Okay, still people want it. Okay, hold on a second. Let me drop it on the floor. I'm going to stomp on it. I'm going to push it down in with my foot. Okay? Who wants it? Is there nothing I can do to this dead burn thing that would make you stop wanting it? What if it's an old one? You know how periodically you get one of these old, really wrinkly, dying $20 bills? Do you still want it? Why? Why do you still want this old piece of paper? Wouldn't it be better to say, I just want it when it's crisp and brand new? Isn't there a difference between a crisp, brand new $20 bill and a wrinkled, old, thrown up, beat up $20 bill? There's no difference. You know why? Because unconsciously, this bill is an icon. You notice that it doesn't matter the condition of the bill. The condition of the bill has absolutely nothing to do with its worth. The worth is beyond the state of the bill. It makes no difference what the state of the bill is. Absolutely none.
Now, why? Because this piece of paper is an icon. It is, what is the definition of an icon? An icon is a reality whose identity is to point beyond itself to the reality that it represents, the really real. It's a pointer. And so you know immediately that no matter what the state of the $20 bill, the real worth towards which this bill points is unaffected by the state of the bill. Now, that is an icon. An icon, most of you, or many of you, will be familiar with this when you're with your computers. Those of you, we talk constantly about icons on our computers. What is an icon? An icon in your computer is not a file in and of itself. It is a little piece, usually of graphic arts, although it could be a letter, it could be anything. But its identity as an icon is that it points beyond itself. And when you double-click on the icon, it takes you to the reality that it represents, the program or the file or whatever it is. Now, when we use the word icon in religious terminology, that is what we are talking about. For example, that crucifix. The crucifix in this church is an icon. Why? Because the crucifix, we know, is made out of wood and bronze and, you know, whatever else composites are up there. When we kneel down in front of the crucifix, we are not worshiping that thing. Why? Because it's an icon. An icon is a representation that leads you to somewhere else. Let me give you another example. If you have your family, if you have a photograph, someone that you love, that's not, let's say they're not present, they're living in another state, and you take their photograph one moment, one evening when you're alone, and you're sitting there drinking a cup of coffee, and you look at their photograph, and you begin to talk to them, or you begin to think about them, and you begin, and you might even kiss the photograph, or you know, put a candle in front of it, or whatever, something, whatever. What are you doing? Are you confusing the photograph with the real person? Well, of course not. Because the photograph is an icon. An icon that reminds you of the real person. It takes you mentally, because we are men and women of flesh and blood, we need signs and symbols that transfer our minds, transcend our minds into the reality which we are talking about. There are things, you know, if you go in my room in the rectory, in my closet, at the end of my closet, there is an old cotton bathrobe that is torn and it should, the day that I die and they clean out my closet, they're going to say, what was he keeping this thing around for? It looks like it could be a rag. But do you know why I keep it? Because it's an icon. My dad wore that when he was dying. And when I look at that bathrobe, I can't throw it away. Because it is an icon of my father. That is not a bathrobe by itself. It transports me to my father and to the period of his suffering. That crucifix is not in and of itself anything but the material it's made of. But it transports us to the reality of the suffering and death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That is what an icon is. Now, Dorothy, come here a minute. This is Dorothy. Dorothy's on our staff, lest you think I'm picking on some poor, unsuspecting parishioner. And she was unsuspecting. I didn't tell her I was going to do this. Now, I want you to look at this. Look at this. Okay? Look at this. Okay? That's an icon. That is... Now, how do you know, those of you who know Dorothy, how do you know that the presence of the person of Dorothy is present? By the way her icon looks. Her body is the icon of her presence. When I see the person whom I have come to recognize as the person of Dorothy, I know that the person of Dorothy is there because I remember what her icon looks like. Now, the person of Dorothy is represented in the world by her body. But her body does not exhaust who Dorothy is. Dorothy is also tied to God. And so when I treat Dorothy, I am not treating just the icon. I am treating the person who is tied to God. Now, when Dorothy was a young child, right?
You know me then? No,
I didn't know you then. But when Dorothy was a young child, as well as me, okay? When we were both kids, by the way, we both have the same last name. She's my sister. Her name is Brooks, and my last name is Arroyo, which is exactly the same word in Spanish for English, Brook. Okay. So, when we were both young together, we were a lot better looking than we are today. No, you're gorgeous today, Dorothy. You're judging. But you were one heck of a real good looking hunk of woman back when you were in your... Now, is she... Am I? Because we're now old and gray. Are we less worth it than we were young? Are we the same? Is there the same value in terms of persons? That's right. There is. Just because the body begins to get old and begins to kind of fall apart, right? It does. We both experience that. That doesn't mean that the person has changed at all. We are still like that $20 bill. It doesn't matter. The respect that is due to the human body has to be given regardless of the age of the body. Why? Because the body is an icon. An icon of the person. Thank you, Dorothy.
The $20 bill.
No, $20 bill. Now, what is an idol? What is an idol? Our culture idolizes the human body. You know what an idol is? An idol is when a reality does not point beyond itself. A reality is only what it is. In the Old Testament, when they would say, where there's a commandment, Thou shalt not worship any idols, any graven images. Do you know why? Because in those times, there was a huge danger of confusion. They were not aware yet of the presence of the living God, the Spirit God. And so when they would create an image, they were actually worshiping the image. The image was an end in itself. It would be like saying, that crucifix does not represent Jesus. That is Jesus. And we would bow before it, and we would say, you are God. That's an idol. Now, we do that to the human body. Look at our culture as the way, and it's, our culture is still mixed. We still have some traditions of icon, but a lot of idol. Look at how we idolize the body. What do we do in terms of valuing people who are super beautiful and super rich? We value them. They are idolized. Even our TV shows say it, American Idol. Okay? We idolize them for what they do and what they look like and what they're worth. Now, what happens in, what do? We are a culture who is constantly, we are constantly afraid of our icons getting off. And so we're constantly working on our icons. You know where people work on their icons? It's called a gym. Okay? When you go to the gym, you are very anxious about your icon. And the reason you're anxious about your icon is because you know that people look at you and assess your worth as a person by the look of your icon. We look at people who are overweight or who are, you know, the other day I watched a program. It was heartbreaking on people who have anorexia. And these poor young ladies who are almost totally emaciated and look like living skeletons. What, you know why? Because when they look in the mirror, they think they're still fat. And they have become infected by the obsession of our culture to look, their icon must look beautiful. And notice what is left out of that. They do not feel valued as persons because the personhood in our culture has become devalued to the point that it is almost invisible unless your icon, your body, is not right. And we do that. Do you know what we do with old icons? We put them in an old icon home. Okay? These are people. They're people. But we put them in old icon homes. And no one pays any attention to them because they're old icons. Notice, body is the only thing that's worth it. The person has almost lost their value. And when the icon is not visible to us, the icon is inside another icon, it doesn't matter. It's just an icon. It's called abortion. And just an icon, it's just a body. That has no self. That has no self. And you can go on and on and on in the way we do that. And look at human sexuality. We treat human sexuality as if the body, it was just an itch in the body. It doesn't mean anything. Notice, doesn't mean anything. It means that human sexuality doesn't point to anything more. It's just bodies. It's just bodies. Now, what did God intend? What God intended was that the human body be a representation of you, and because he is inside of you, it is also a representation of God. When you and I walk into that chapel, lots of us acknowledge the presence of the tabernacle, as well we should. And we bow, and when we do all kinds of religious gestures to show respect, and well that you should. But do you understand that logically, that tabernacle is a box made of metal? What makes that box holy is the presence of consecrated bread, meaning the presence of Christ. When that presence of Christ is given here in communion, it disappears into your body. You are a living, walking tabernacle. Please, I don't know if any of you were taught this. We were taught when we were little by some well-meaning religious and lay teachers and priests that when you went to communion, the presence of Christ was almost like, it kind of like shone inside of you. It shined inside of you for 15 minutes or something like that. It went... And then after about 15 or 20 minutes, it went... And he was gone. That's why you were told you had to go recollect for 15 or 5 minutes or 10 minutes. That is wrong. The presence of Christ is constant inside of you. Constant. That's why Jesus would say, whatsoever you do to the least of my brethren, you did it to me. Because every single one of you is a living icon, a living tabernacle of the presence of Jesus. Every single one of us. And when God created the human body, that's what it was meant to be. And going back to my talking about human sexuality. Human sexuality was created by God as a pointer to Him and to new life. When people make love, what they are doing is they are replicating the creation of God. God created human sexuality so that it would be a replication of Himself. When two people make love, what they are doing is they are engaging in the way God intended for human beings to create human life with Him. Sex points beyond itself to the creative power of God. We are experiencing a oneness with God. And that's why sexuality, the problem is, we remove the fact that it's pointing to something else, to the connection with God, and to the connection with the creation of human life, and we make it into an idol, a thing in itself, a thing that has no connection to God. That is the problem. It's not, you know, a lot of times the church gets accused of, you know, all the church is hung up on sex. No, we're not hung up on sex. The problem is that human beings tend to idolize stuff. That's what original sin is. When we cut off our connection with God in Adam and Eve, it didn't mean that we live without God. You know what it means? It means we make gods of all kinds of other things. Human beings cannot live without a relationship to something that is supreme, that gives meaning to their lives. And so when you cut off your relationship with God, you begin to make gods. You may not call them that, but you begin to make gods out of things because you begin to worship them. Remember where I always tell you the word worship means? It comes from the word, from two words. The suffix is ship, which means the practice or the value of. So, for example, if I say authorship, penmanship, craftsmanship. It is the practice of what went before. When you have worship, were is a shortened version of the word worth. And so worthship, when you worship something, it means it is the highest value in your life. It is the highest worth. And so if the highest value in your life, effectively, may not intellectually, but effectively, if the thing you're living for is sex, money, power, whatever it is, that is what, in fact, you worship. If you are living just for another human being, in effect, you worship them. Now, that could be, they could slowly take you to God. But to the degree that it ends in and of itself, that is an idol. And so today, what I want you to get is where the respect for the human body that Christian tradition talks about comes from. We treat the human body with respect because it is an icon of the presence of the person, and the person is irrevocably tied to God. And so therefore, the human body is an icon of the face of God. It is an icon because Jesus said, "Whatsoever you do to the least of my brethren, you did it to me." That is where the whole notion of the respect that we as Christians have for people comes from. Because we are not an end in itself. We are greater than what you can see. And so, the human body, an idol or an icon? We live in a culture that encourages you to idolize. Meaning, remember, to make something an end in itself. But the church, the people of Jesus Christ, the disciples of Jesus, remember what Jesus taught us. And what he taught us is that every single one of us is a walking, living tabernacle, a living icon of the presence of God, the presence of God in a living person. And they are way greater than their body. And our respect and our love for them does not come just because they are the body. It comes because they are walking, breathing tabernacles and icons of the greater self, which is their person and also the presence of God. The body. It's either an idol or it's an icon of something far greater than itself. May God bless.